Thank you. All right. Good morning. Greetings. It is a joy to be with you. But the Lord has work to do yet in taking away that nervousness. I don't know how many of y'all have watched the movie Sheffy. He's a traveling evangelist. He's a circuit riding preacher is what he was. And the first time he stood up before the church to preach, he was eyeing that back door pretty good. And he stood there working up the courage for a few minutes till finally he just didn't have it. He bolted for the back door. So if y'all see me eyeing the back door for just a minute, you'll know what I got going on in my heart right now. So, no, I am excited to be here with you. I have, God's been working in my life. So when I was asked to share, it wasn't hard for me to know what I was going to share about. I think Jaron set the stage pretty well for me last week when he shared about the sandbox and us spending countless hours making our perfect little castle, getting all life just set up right for us, and then just that quick, mom calls and it's time to go home. Big wave comes, washes it off, and it's all over. And keeping our life into perspective, realizing that's kind of what we're doing. We're making our little sand castles, and we can get really wrapped up making sure my sand castle looks better than the next guy and going through life thinking that all that really matters is my little sand castle. When in reality, the sand castle that should just be a tool for us, and that should not be something I'm getting my life wrapped up in. So I appreciate him setting the precedent. I know he's not here today, but thank you for that last week, Jaron. This week I'm going to talk a little bit about racing. And it seems like racing is something we've all enjoyed ever since the very beginning of time. I don't know. Scripture doesn't say Cain and Abel, if they raced or not, but I'm assuming they probably did. It seems like every little boy wants to race, and he wants to be the fastest one out there. And recently we're sitting on the front porch, and my boys, they're racing each other. And then they're feeling all accomplished. They're faster than their sister, right? Both of the boys are faster than their sister. Then they got to figure out which of the boys are faster yet. So the boys are racing each other. They know who's faster. They've raced more times than they can count. They keep on racing. There's something in us that we enjoy a good race, right? So they finally decide who is faster between them. Well, now they need to race dad. So they get dad out there, and dad doesn't much care for racing, but I come out there to run a little race with my boys, and we're standing right there at the starting point. We're ready to go. And Blake's, hey, hang on, Dad. What do you need? Oh, he sits down on the ground. He takes his shoes off, takes his socks off. And he takes off everything that he could to make him just a little bit quicker. He knew he's going to need every advantage he had here. So he laid everything off, and we ran the race. And he had a little less weight there as we ran that race. So we might look at that, we might smile a little bit, but I think there's going to be a lesson there that we can take out. But before we dive into that lesson, I have one story that I'm going to share with y'all. And hopefully I can keep y'all's attention engaged with the story, and then we'll try and pull some meat out and some lessons that we can learn from it. So I'm going to start off by telling you a story about Will Stoneman. He's a 17-year-old young man. Lived a handful of years back. Well, his father passed away. He didn't have a dad, and their farm was about to be foreclosed on, and so the family was broke. They needed money desperately. He lived up north, and as they're scratching their head trying to figure out what they're going to do to be able to pay off this farm, to be able to continue living where they're living, he couldn't make enough money working by the hour. He couldn't figure out how he's going to come up with the finances to pay off his farm. He's 17 years old. He feels responsible to provide for his mom. So he hears of this dog race. There's going to be this sled. Like they have the whole team of dogs, and they pull this sled. And so he's determined he's going to run this race, and he's going to win this race, and he's going to win enough money in this race, he's going to be able to pay off his farm. So he has His mom is there, and absolutely not, son, this is ridiculous. You can't do this. And well, they keep on coming up with it. There's got to be another way. They scratch in their heads. They can sell off this. They can sell off that. They can't come up with enough money. So finally he says, there is no other choice. I'm going to run this dog race, and I'm going to win. There's the only way I have to save the family farm. So he starts training day in and day out. He's exercising. He's losing weight. He's making sure he is in tip-top physical condition. He has to be as light as he can possibly be. He has to be able to run as fast as he can possibly run. He has to have the endurance to run. So as he starts training, his this dog race, by the way, is 522 miles. This is not something he's going to run in a day. All right, so this is going to be an extended period of time. 522 miles. He's going to be racing from Winnipeg, Manitoba, or some of the, how do I say, Manitoba, to St. Paul, Minnesota. So they're getting ready for this race, and he's gearing up for it. He knows it's going to be cold. He's going to be racing in conditions that are sub-zero all day long. He's going to be racing in conditions that are not fit for humans to be in. He knows he has to be in absolute perfect condition. So he starts training, and one day, 2 o'clock in the morning, I should say one day, one night, 2 o'clock in the morning, his mentor that is mentoring him, getting him ready for this race, pulls him out of bed, throws him outside in the cold when it's well below zero. And he is forced, he's there beating on the door, he can't figure out why they would throw him out. He's out in his skippies, he's supposed to survive in this sub-zero weather. Like, how's this going to work? He was forced to go sleep with the dogs and to bond with his dogs. His dogs kept him warm enough to stay alive. And he endured that hardship. He endured that rejection. The mentor knew that he's going to have to be able to endure rejection. He's going to have to be able to endure ridiculously hard things in order for him to last. Well, the day finally came, and he decided he was ready for this race. And so they come up to the starting line. They're ready to start this race, and they're all lined up. There's 11 teams that are going to be racing. And they came up to Will and said, "Will, you're 17 years old. You're not old enough to race. This is ridiculous. You're going to die. This is not safe. You need to call it off. You need to quit." And against his better judgment, he refused. No, he's going to push through. He's going to run this race. So the first day they run off, and again, this is going to be a multiple day race. So it's not like you're just running for all you're worth. But he's running behind his sled, and the dogs are pulling his sled. First day, he makes it through. He's chapped, he's hurting, but he makes it through the first day. He gets there to the stop for the night. The rest of the teams are inside of the hotel. It's nice and warm. They're playing cards. They're eating and drinking and enjoying life. And he knows that he can't go in there, because if he gets in there, he's going to get comfortable and he's going to get distracted with why he's here. So he stays away from that company. He stays out in this, they have like a shed or a mini barn that they spent the night in with the dogs. He stayed in the shed with the dogs, and the only thing he would eat the whole time he's racing was this special cake that his mom made that was filled with proteins and carbohydrates and all kinds of things that give you energy but aren't good for you, you know, one of them. So this is the only thing that he would eat. He refused to take part of anything else that might distract him, and he was dedicated to this race. That was day one. Day two comes, and he's pushing through. Day three, he pushes. Well, he's getting tired by the end of day three, and just thinks he can't go anymore. As he's hustling along, he's keeping up with the rest, but he's not ahead. He has others that are ahead of him that are breaking the path, and he's able to keep on rolling. He makes it to the end of the third day. Eventually, he makes it to the end of the fourth day. At the end of the fourth day, he's coming up close, and he sees some nice bricks laying off to the side. And he, for all the world, wants to stop and get these bricks and lay them in his sled, because he knows when he gets home, that'd make an amazing fire ring. And so he wants to get these bricks and lay them in his sled for his fire ring. But we all know that bringing on that extra weight would have been the foolishest decision he could possibly make, right? He had enough discernment to leave the bricks. He makes it through the end of the fourth day. Day five comes. He has hypothermia. He wasn't fit to continue racing. He was far enough from civilization, his mom couldn't stop him. He didn't have people there to tell him he needs to quit. On day five, the last day, he thinks he's going to be able to finish it on the fifth day. He gets up at the crack of dawn, before dawn, it was like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. He gets up while it's still dark. Now he knows the only chance he has to win this race is if he is in the lead. Now he's going to have to be blazing the trail. That puts on extra extra strain on him and his dogs. He has to blaze the trail here. He has to have enough endurance to get out in front and to be able to stay in front of the team for the rest of the time. So he takes off. He's in the lead. Well, he's in the lead far enough that it's starting to scare his competitors. By now, half the competition has fell off. We started off with 11 teams. When we ended, there was 5 teams. So along the way, we keep on having competitors fall off to the side. He's in the lead. He's far enough in the lead that they're turning their own dogs loose to run ahead and try and attack his dogs and distract him. So now not only does he have to blaze a trail, he also has to ward off all the distractions that are coming towards him. He's getting distracted with everybody else that is trying to throw things into his life to trip him up. At one point, he fell through thin ice. He had a bunch of obstacles he had to overcome. But through those obstacles, he was able to overcome those obstacles and win the race. So he finally, at the final, he crossed the race. He was, at that point, he was frozen. Like he couldn't even move. He stood on his sled, and his dogs were trained well enough to drag him across the finish line. He had built a relationship with his dogs. Dogs knew what he wanted. His dogs knew what was expected of him and drove him across to the finish line. He won the race and he lived happily ever after. So that's how the story goes. But we look at the story and we say, what can we take from that story to so much of that applies to our life? We are on a race, right? We know that we are on a race. Did Will win because he was the smartest there? Did he win because he was the strongest, the most experienced? No, he didn't. Will won that race because he was disciplined and because he learned to lay aside distractions, because he learned how to lay things to the side to make his life lighter so that he's able to stay focused on the race that he's running. Great races are won before race day. It's in that preparation as they're running the race. The great races are won before race day because they show up on race day prepared. They're ready. We have laid weights to the side and we're ready to race. All right. I have a tendency to talk too fast when I get nervous and I start skipping over things. So I'm going to try and slow down after take time to hit everything I'm hoping to hit. So I'm going to take a passage from Hebrews here. And Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Hebrews 12, verses 1 and 2. Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Verse 2. Looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy who was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. So I think y'all can see where I'm going with the verse. Obviously, with the story of the race, and now the verse here about laying off the weights. But before we get into the weights, it says we are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses. What are the witnesses that we are compassed about with? What I never really stopped to consider the witnesses. Do we have witnesses of the race that we're running? And from what I understand, it's referring to Hebrews 11, which we just read through, which we didn't read, but the prior chapter, which we call the Hall of Faith. By faith Abel, by faith Enoch, by faith Noah, by faith Abraham. And it lists Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, Sarah, numerous of those that have gone on before us. They have gone on before us. They have finished the race, all right? So we are compassed about with them as our witnesses. We have witnessed that it is possible. We have witnessed that they have done it. They have finished the race. So let's take a look at them and figure out what they have done, how they did it to finish the race. And we're going to do that just a little bit later. If we can learn from them and how they won the race, I think it will make a large, it will make a huge difference for us in how we run our race. If we can learn how to lay those things to the side, we see how they ran the race and then we are able to run the race in the same way and be successful and to win that race. Let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience. I scratched my head just a little bit with running with patience. How do we run with patience? Patience to me is to just wait. Just be careful. Just take it easy. Don't get too riled up. Patience is being gentle, right? So I'm not a Greek scholar by any means, but I looked up to see what was the word that they used in Greek. And the word, it was actually two words, is hupomane. And the word hupo means under, and the mane would mean to stay, to abide, or to endure. So I like the visual of enduring, to run with endurance, more so than running with patience. But as we run with endurance, we have to be like Will. When he sees these distractions along the way, the competition's dog is over here nipping at him, trying to distract him. He sees other nice things that he finds along the way that he wants to pick up. He has to be able to lay those distractions aside, disregard those distractions, and be able to stay focused. But so often, those distractions, they happen slowly. It's not that Will would actually, he'd never stop and pick up those bricks and lay those bricks on his sled. He knows that's just utter foolishness. It makes him heavier. He's going to slow him down. He's never going to win the race. But it happens slowly. Before we know it, we start slowing down just a little bit. We don't even know why. We become tired. We start slowing down. Well, then we realize, well, it's not even just a distraction. It's what I'm taking in. If I'm not taking in protein, if I'm not taking in sustenance, I'm going to get tired. I'm going to slow down. We've got to come back to the source. We've got to be eating daily. We can't run without sustenance. I think what I'd like to do now, though, in order for us to be able to lay aside weights, we have to know what the weights are. And the weights are different for each generation. And it is easy for us to look at the young people. Man, the young people ought to do this different. What in the world are they doing that? They're getting so distracted. They would do things just a little bit different. They have their own set of weights. We have our set of weights, and they're going to look different. And if we can't deal well with our weights, we cannot expect our youth and our children to deal well with their weights. Our children, my children, are going to be a direct reflection of me. If I'm wrapped up in the cares of this life, my kids are going to be wrapped up in the cares of life almost every time. Our kids, our youth, are going to be a direct reflection of who we are. And so we have got to learn how to deal well with the weights that we have today. We each will have weights that are along, that we see, that we tend to gravitate towards, that we end up carrying further than we mean to. We end up having weights, and if we can't deal with those weights, we don't expect your children to. Don't expect the youth to. We need to be leaders. We need to be examples. And let's lay these weights that we have to the side and be an example for those that are following us. If they see us on fire for Christ, laying weights to the side, if we are laying things to the side, we're excited about following God. It's not going to be hard for me to get my sons excited about doing the same thing. They get excited about what I'm excited about. But when they see me excited about making money and excited about making a bigger sandcastle, they're going to get excited about the exact same thing. So I'm going to pull the whiteboard out here, and we're just going to make a list. If y'all will help me, what are the weights? Let's identify what these weights are, and what are we going to do about these weights? So I'll just roll the whiteboard over here now. So the scripture says to lay off the weights and the sins. Let's start off, we'll have sins, which I think are fairly clear. We know what the sins are. And we can add some to the list, but mainly what we're going to, be focusing on is the weight. What in our day and age is one of the largest weights that we're dealing with? I'd like to have, let's go with somebody in the intermediate class. Somebody in the intermediate class, what is one of the largest weights that you're dealing with? Intermediates, what was that, 13 to 15? 12 to 15, something like that? Anthony, I appreciate your example of being able to be okay with silence, so thank you. I'll see if I can be okay with that as well. What was it? Peer pressure. Very good. Thank you. All right, so I got peer pressure. We're going to test out my homeschooling spelling. We'll see how it goes. All right, so we got, how about youth group? Somebody from the youth group. What is the number one weight that you're dealing with? This is not necessarily a sin. It's just a weight. It's something that can weigh you down. Technology? If you decide you want to send your kids to church school, I understand. That's fine. Okay. All right. Now for us adults, what are weights that we are dealing with? Austin, stop laughing. What are weights that we are dealing with? Real weights that tend to weigh us down. Again, this is not necessarily sins. These are just things that distract us, that pull us off course. When we're mushing ahead, we're rushing towards the finish line, that they end up slowing us down because we're too busy with these other less important things. Now, I got a list of 20 or 30, but I'd like to hear from y'all. Austin, what is one weight that could potentially slow you down?
I think sometimes the drive to earn money.
The drive to earn money. Maybe we'll just say it just like that. Drive to earn money. I think that's the part that gets me hung up. It's important, but and that's where I want to stay. All right, somebody else. Let's make a list. There's a lot of weights that tend to weigh us down.
I'm not sure how to word it, but what other people think of me. Status. Reputation,
physical ailments.
That can be a real thing. I can listen. If y'all can yell out another one's fine. Pursuit. I screwed it. I don't make the homeschoolers look too bad. All right, next. Pursuit of pleasure. Worrying about the future, what's to come. Y'all haven't even called out the one that was one of the biggest hang-ups for me. There's a couple that is kind of where the message was born from. You touched on it. For me, it was social media. Social media, and then also just movies. These are things that are not necessarily wrong. They're distractions. They're weights, right? There's a lot more. Do you have any more?
The distraction for me would be
Israel, Iran, Russia, Ukraine, politics. Those can be distractions to me where I take too much time on that and then become discouraged over the current situation.
More? Sorry, I heard one.
Comparing?
Comparing our lives with other people's lives? Okay, so this is certainly not an exhaustive list. Let me move back just enough so I can be able to read it. It's certainly not an exhaustive list, and we haven't even listed any of the sins. I'll just read the verse again. Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, which we know who those witnesses are now, those who have gone on before us, let us lay aside every weight. Let us lay aside all of these and the sin, which hopefully most of those that we have already laid aside, but these weights can become sins if we're not willing to lay them down. Let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience or with endurance the race that is set before us. So if we're running and we have these weights on us, can we imagine a racer? We have an Olympic racer comes up to race, and he shows up at the starting line. He's ready to go, and he has a big set of work boots on. We said, what are you thinking? Get them work boots on. Put something light. Let's go. You got to be able to move. Lay these things to the side. The work boots aren't wrong, but there's a time and a place, and this is not the time or the place. We need to be able to lay these weights to the side and be able to move forward with endurance and be able to move forward quickly while we still have time today. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 6:12, all things are lawful unto me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. How many of these things are we under the power of? Can I lay them to the side? If you say you can lay them to the side, try laying them to the side for a month and see how well it goes. If you can't lay it to the side for a month, then probably we're under the power of it, right? If we can't lay it down, then it has a grip on us to one extent or another. Paul says, I will not be brought under the power of any. All things are lawful, but not all things are helpful. Corrie Ten Boom had a quote that, if the devil can't get you with sin, he'll make you busy. And that's where I'm going to, where this message first was born from. When God was working in my life, and I was asking God, give me more of your spirit, man. Reveal yourself to me. What is it that in the early church, they experienced you in such a much bigger way than we're experiencing? I see you a little. I see some small movements, but I don't see big movements, God. I want to see more. Show yourself to me. And as I started asking God for these things, as soon as I was done asking God for these things, I pick up my phone and I start scrolling social media. And then it's Facebook Marketplace. Man, I found some good deals on Marketplace. And I distracting myself, and I couldn't figure out why God wasn't speaking to me, why I'm not hearing from God. I felt God was asking me to lay down social media. Again, I'm not saying these things are sin. I'm not trying to judge anybody that has it. But this is just the journey that we're on for right now as a couple. We've felt we need to lay down social media to be able to have a clear head so that we can actually be able to have time for silence and to be able to hear God. We need to be able to lay down social media. What about movies? Let's lay down the movies. We can go for the rest of the year without any movies, at least without any internet. So that if you want a movie, you actually got to remember them DVDs. You pop in, watch some DVDs. So that is still a possibility. You can get rid of the internet in the home. We got rid of the social media and just be able to quiet things down. And I think what happened, the reason we felt we needed to do that was when we started to look at the lives of those great witnesses that have gone on before us. We're compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, right? Those great witnesses, how about David, the man after God's own heart? He would have been one of those great witnesses. Where did God meet him? It was when he was in the field taking care of his sheep. It was in the silence, in the quietness. When he left, when Saul came to see the brothers, Jesse said, "Nah, he's insignificant. Leave him out in the field." He was a nobody, but he was out in the field in the quietness, away from all the hustle and the bustle, away from the spotlight. He was able to build that relationship with Christ. That's where he got to know his Lord and Savior. And that's where he began that relationship with him that was said of him, "He's a man after my own heart." How about Moses? He's another one of the great witnesses that has gone on before us. He's born with a silver spoon in his mouth. Could have had anything he wanted. But yet he chose to leave the pleasures of sin. And he went out into the wilderness. God, he wasn't hearing God, at least not to that extent, when he was in the palace, when he was surrounded with ease and with the comfort and all the many distractions. That's not where he was experiencing God. Where he was experiencing God was when he went out to the wilderness and he was a shepherd. Just a humble, lowly shepherd doing a no man's job. That's when God revealed himself to him. It's because, at least part, in part, is because it was quiet. He was able to hear from God. How about Samuel? He was doing priestly duties. He was there helping the priests. He was there in the tabernacle doing all that he was doing. God didn't speak to him when he was hustling and bustling and doing good work. It was at night when everything was quiet. Everybody was in bed. Silence. Samuel. That's when God spoke to him, right? It was when he was quiet enough to be able to hear. How about John the Baptist? He was born for a very purpose of going before the Lord and preparing a way. You would think he should be out in the middle. He should have the spotlight on him. He should be the one that is out teaching and preaching. He lived in the wilderness. He ate honey and wild locusts. The man lived in solitude where he was able to hear from the Lord. Obviously, crowds came to him, but he made his home in the wilderness. Jesus, he lived in the crowds. There's crowds all around him, but he'd withdraw for days. He spent all night in silence and in prayer, seeking the Lord. Elijah, at 1 Kings, and he said, "Go forth and stand upon the mount before the Lord, and behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind rent the mountain." Imagine that, a wind so strong it ripped the mountain. "And it break the pieces, and break in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still small voice." It was quiet. He heard a whisper. That's where God met him. That's where God was able to speak to him. That's where Elijah heard him. It wasn't in the big grand gestures, the huge things that God was able to do that. That was God doing all that. But God was not in that. God was in the silence and the quietness when Elijah was quiet enough to pay attention and listen to that still small voice. I can't hear a still small voice when I'm watching reels, when I'm scrolling, when I'm looking for deals on Marketplace. And again, they can have their place, but they are so distracting. I couldn't hear the voice of God. I needed to be able to shut those things off, get them out of my life, at least for a time, be able to purge those things out, and so I can hear from the Lord clearly. Those are part of the great cloud of witnesses that have gone on before us. And if that is how they want, if David, Moses, Samuel, John the Baptist, Jesus, Elijah, these, we can see what they did to win, right? We can see what they did, where they met God. They didn't meet God in some loud, noisy way. They were all in the silence and the quietness. What in the world makes us think we're going to be any different? What makes us think that we can endure all the noise and all the distractions and somehow them not become weights and not slow us down? However, if you choose to take these weights out of your life, we do have to be intentional. Just taking something out of our life is not necessarily always the answer. We need to take something out of our life. We need to replace it with something that is purposeful and intentional. Luke 11, verse 24. I'll just turn to that real quick. Luke 11, verse 24. When an unclean spirit is gone out of a man and walketh through a dry place, and seeking rest and finding none, he saith, I think I jumped ahead a little far. Let me go up. Let me read a little larger portion. I'll start in verse 21. When a strong man armed keepeth his place and his goods are in peace, but when he is stronger than he shall come upon him and overcome him and taketh from him all his armor wherein he trusted and divideth his spoils. I am getting myself mixed up. I'm sorry. I am going to jump down again to verse 24. When the unclean spirit is gone out of a man, he walketh through a dry place, seeking rest and finding none. He saith, I will return unto my house whence I came out. And when he cometh, he findeth it swept and garnished. So these weights have been laid to the side. We took these things out of our life. Then goeth he and taketh to him seven other spirits, more wicked than himself, and they entered in and dwell there, and the last state of the man was worse than the first. Now, I'm not saying that if you take social media out of your life and you don't replace it with something good, that you won't have a bunch of evil spirits coming. But I think there's a lesson that we can take from this man that had a spirit cast out of him, but he never replaced that spirit with anything different. And when you just have a void in your life, eventually that spirit came back, along with seven other spirits more evil than the first. So if we choose to take out these weights, if we choose to lay these weights off to the side, if you want to take social media out of your life, what are you going to replace it with? Make sure you replace it with something and don't just have an empty life where you're sitting there doing nothing. Be purposeful with that life. Be purposeful with that time that you have. We're endeavoring to replace social media with prayer and silence. Just enough silence to be able to hear. That was kind of awkward for just a minute when Anthony was up here and nobody was answering. And there's an awkward silence. There's something about us, we don't like silence, right? But yet it does something to us. It's good for us to have that silence. It gives us time to contemplate. It gives us time to reflect. And in this case, it gives us time to be able to hear from God. So we're endeavoring to replace social media with prayer and intentional silence. How about movies? Again, if you watch an occasional movie, that's fine. But if you're watching movies every evening before you go to bed, that takes up a lot of time. So we're endeavoring to lay the movies to the side and to replace that with family time and books. I'm not a bookworm. You tell my spelling, I'm not big into reading either. To have more intentional family time, it is... When we cross over that finish line, to hear those words, well done, thou good and faithful servant, and to be able to look back and see that my family is following me, there is nothing more important than that. And if we're not being purposeful today with replacing the weights and replacing them with purposeful family time that we're investing into our kids, that we are preparing them for the battle that they have ahead, they're not going to make it. It is you and my responsibility to prepare our kids for the challenges they're going to face. So let's remove the filler. Let's remove the light junk in our life and replace it with real family time, with real time that we can spend cultivating and building relationships that are going to last, so that we will hear those words one day. Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Oftentimes these weights are, they happen slow. You don't even really know. Do you intermediates that somebody mentioned peer pressure, did you first recognize when you started dealing with peer pressure? Probably not. It was very slow. It happens slowly. Next thing you know, you start actually caring about what somebody thinks, and you start making your decisions based on what somebody else might think about me. Those are there's slow things. They happen gradually. Technology. We live with technology all around us. We have to have technology one extent or another, but it slowly can get us entangled in it. Whether it's Snapchat, Facebook, whatever the young generation is, technology is the youth. I'm not sure what do y'all use. Snapchat, probably something like that. Whatever it is, that happens slowly. You didn't just find that overnight. It's something you started using. It probably was a tool, but eventually it can ensnare us into the point where it's a weight and it's slowing us down. If it's not slowing you down and you're using it as a tool, it's not a weight. And God bless you as you continue to use it to be a tool. But if you have a question if it is a tool or not, try laying it down for a minute. And it's not hard to figure out if it's a weight or if it's a tool. If it's a tool, you'll need it for those occasional instances to fix something. It's not a tool you don't need constantly. You fix something, you get right back to your business, right? In Hebrews 12, it says to lay aside every weight. It doesn't say ask God to remove these weights from our lives. It indicates that we have to be intentional. I have to purposefully take something out of my life and lay it down. It's not something we can get. God, give me more of you. I want more of you. And expect him to somehow magically take these things out of our life. God is asking that we be purposeful and intentional. If we have a weight that we're carrying along with us, that we are willing and able to take this weight out of our life, lay it down, and then run the good race and be able to influence and encourage and bless and do all these things to all those around us. As we're running the race, it's important that we stay with our brothers and sisters. So like I said earlier, when Will was running, he was running this race with the other competitors. They were able to, it was easier for each other when they were racing together. One would blaze the trail, they would take turns blazing the trail up ahead. Eventually, some of them did fall off. They didn't all endure to the end. But the brothers, as it were, had to stay together to blaze that trail together. Together, there was safety. Together, they were able to look out for each other. Together, they were able to endure to the end. Five of them were able to endure to the end. Those that were not willing to stay with the pack, we know that they ended up falling to the side. So my question I want to leave with y'all today is, what weight have we been carrying? And is it slowing us down? Are we carrying weights? And if we do, let's call them weights. Let's be okay to call weights weights. And again, I'm not saying that they're sins. There's a whole section of sins, but we're talking about things that are slowing us down, just dragging us down and keeping us from running with endurance. We're maybe walking or barely trudging along anymore. We have these weights hanging on us. We have the big clodhopper boots that we're trying to race in. We can't understand why it's not working. What weight am I carrying? Let's identify it as a weight. Let's be willing to lay that weight off to the side and be able to run with endurance. So, just made a note for myself. Let's not expect God to take these things from us. It's going to be something that we have to, it's a purposeful decision we have to choose. God, this is not adding to my Christian life. This is not adding to the life that you have called me to. You are not making, I'm not running faster because of this, and this is slowing me down. God, I give it up. I know you're not taking this from me. Anything that makes it harder to run towards Jesus is too heavy. If something is slowing you down that you can't run towards Jesus, that becomes a weight. And that's what I'd like to leave you with this morning. Consider the things that we have in our life And I don't want this to be like a message like condemning everybody, we need to get rid of these things. No, I want it to be an encouragement of, let's consider these weights. Are they weights? If they're weights, let's repent of them. Get them out of our life. It's not over. It's not too late. It's fine that we've had weights with us, but it's not fine if we continue carrying these weights. We have been called to run with endurance, and we can't run while we try to drag along some cement blocks. So let's lay the weights to the side, and let's run with endurance. Let's run fight the good fight, and hear those words, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." So, hope that can be an inspiration and encouragement. And I was going to add yet, and maybe I still will, surround yourself with men. Surround yourself with a small group. I have found a tremendous blessing for myself to be a part of an accountability group. I have Corey, Jason Hurst, and soon to be Austin. We're a part of a men's group. We get together 5 o'clock in the morning, and I have gained so much being able to meet with my brothers, be exhorted and encouraged, and to be held accountable, and to see these brothers are on fire, man. They are running with excellence. And when I see my brothers that are running, I want to run. I want to lay these weights to the side. So bless you, Corey and Jason, for the influence you've been in my life. Let's continue to run. Get men around you. If you don't have men around you, take the initiative. Get men around you. Start your small group. Ladies as well. Have people around you that you can be open and honest and vulnerable with, and ask them to keep you accountable. I'm laying this to the side, and they hear that you're back on social media next week, you'll have a few questions, I'm sure. So that can be a good thing. All right, I'll sit down and be quiet. Thank you for your time, and be blessed.